So we are at Shabbat Mevorachim Adar, Shabbat Mishpatim, and so it's Parshat Shkalim, and we have two Sifrei Torah, and in the second one, they read from Parshat Ki Tisa. So the Maimah, the discourse, focuses on Parshat Ki Tisa. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemo. God spoke to Moshe saying, Ki Tisa et Rosh Bnei Yisrael. When you will lift up, meaning to count, the heads of the children of Israel, lifkudehem, by their numbers, v'natnu ish, and each person should give, kofer nafsho, the redemption of his soul, lahashem, to God, bifkodotam, when you count them. V'lo yevahem negef bifkodotam, and there shouldn't be any plague against them when you count them. Zeyitnu, this is what they should give. Kol ha'over al ha'pekudim. Now that word over al ha'pekudim is generally translated as the way that Rashi explains it. Ha'over al ha'pekudim. Do you see in the Rashi five lines down? Derech ha'monim. It's the way of people counting something. Ma'avirin et ha'nimnin. They pass those. They cause to pass the things that are being counted. Zeh ha'zeh, one after the other. And similarly, another verse, when it's talking about counting animals which go under the rod, each one that passes under the rod. And similarly elsewhere in Yirmiyah, about the sheep passing by, so it's passing. However, the discourse, if we get as far as that, explains it in a different way. Another way of understanding those words. Machatzit ha-shekel. Each person should give a half a shekel, b'shekel ha-kodesh, the holy shekel. Eschim gera ha-shekel. And a whole shekel is 20 gera. So at the end, the discourse asks, why does it say 20 gera? Why doesn't it say 10? Because we're talking about a half a shekel. Machatzit ha-shekel, the half shekel, should be tchuma la-Hashem, a gift, an offering to God. Kol ha-over la-pekudim, all who are being counted, mi-ben eschim shana v'mayla, of 20 years old and upwards, yiten tchumat Hashem, should give this offering to God. He-ashir lo yabeh, the rich person shouldn't give more, v'hadal lo yamid, and the poor person shouldn't give less, mi-machatzit ha-shekel, than a half shekel, latet et chumat Hashem, to give the gift to God, v'chapel nafshotechem, to atone for your souls. V'lakachta et kesef ha-kippurim, and you should take this money of atonement, me'et b'nei Yisrael, from the children of Israel, v'natata oto and you should give it for the service in the tent of meeting. That means the Mishkan, the sanctuary. And it will be for the children of Israel for a memory before God to atone for their soul, for your souls. Now, let's just see. Now, alavodat, oil moed, that's three. Sorry. First of all, Rush is working out exactly when it was. And then what it's for. Well, when it says here, avodat ha'omoed, that's three lines from the bottom in the Rashi. Hein ha'adonim, ha'adonim shena'asu. These are the sockets which were made. And I think I didn't photocopy enough of the Hebrew. But you can see in the English, it also mentions that it speaks about they were also employed in purchasing communal sacrifices for each year. So I'm sorry, I had to photocopy another page to get the English, the Hebrew. So in other words, the shkalim were paying for two different things. One is the silver sockets, and the other is the communal offerings. And the communal offerings are something that was offered every day, the korban tamid, a lamb in the morning and a lamb in the afternoon. That's why we daven shachrit and mincha. So that corresponds to the two korban tamid, which was every single day of the year. In addition, there are musafim, there are extra offerings on Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, a festival, and so on. But there's always the tamid. And these shkalim are supposed to pay particularly for the tamid. So that's what they are, or the communal offerings, the korbanot tzibur, in general, the public offerings, rather than private offerings. They're, every year, it wasn't only then in the desert that they gave this half shekel. And then when the Jews were in the land of Israel in the time of the temple, every year they would give, each family would give a half a shekel, and that half shekel went to pay for the korbanot in the temple. And they had, there is a tractate in the Talmud called Shkalim. It's actually in the Jerusalem Talmud, not the Babylonian, but it's in the Mishnah as well. And it describes the whole process of collecting the shkalim, changing them if someone had, didn't have the right change, so to speak, to give the half shekel, and how they were kept in the temple in three coffers, which, funnily enough, had Greek letters on them, alpha, beta, gamma, and how they were used in the temple. And the primary purpose was the korbanot, the public korbanot, public offerings. But in the time of the Mishkan, the sanctuary, they were also making the odonim, the sockets. Now, do you understand what the sockets were?
Yeah.
Yes. Right, okay. So like a silver block with a mortise slit in it, and the planks had a tenon which fitted into that mortise, and so the planks fitted into the sockets. So the sockets are right at the bottom. We can just have a little illustration of this. So there's the socket at the bottom, and then comes the plank, and then over the plank there are curtains. So there's a layer of curtains, and then another layer of curtains, which I think hangs down further, another layer of curtains, and then there's a layer of curtain right on top as well. So there's several layers of curtains, and over here is the sockets, more or less covered. Now, you were going to ask.
Oh, no, just a question about the when the kesef, the shekalim were used for the offerings. You said they went towards the daily offerings. So sometimes they had other offerings that were communal, but not private, like maybe Yom Tov offering, possibly. Well, yeah. So where did
I think the shekalim also paid for that.
Right.
I think it paid for all the communal offerings.
Right.
I think so, yeah.
Where did the money generally come from?
For the temple in the temple upkeep.
Yes.
That's called Bedek HaBayit.
Right.
The upkeep of the temple.
Right.
So it describes in the Book of Kings, the first stucker box, how in order to look after the building of the temple, the buildings and the maintain the upkeep, one of the kings, or one of the high priests maybe, run by a prophet, organized a box with a hole in the lid as you come into the temple, and people would put donations there. And later on, in the time of the second temple, there was a kind of a room where people would bring silver things, which had, they were silver leaves, or bunches of grapes for a kind of silver vine, or maybe gold as well. And so that would be the donation. And when money was needed to pay workmen, the people in charge would take a bunch of grapes and sell the silver and use that to pay the workmen. So there was quite a system of maintenance of the temple. And they had a system how the temple floor was washed, because they had a kind of a stream running through, and they would dam one side so that the stream would overflow over the floor, the marble floor. And then they had a system how to clean the Holy of Holies by letting someone down in a kind of a box so that they couldn't see around them, but just the patch of wall that they're scrubbing, like people cleaning big buildings today.
I thought miraculously it wouldn't need cleaning.
Well,
it's quite mundane, sages. Really, isn't it? Until it takes it away.
Well, I mean, the whole point is to have a holy place in the world.
Yes.
If it's going to be an angelic place which never gets dirty, then it won't be in the world. The point is to be in the world. It's, Right, okay, so that gives us an introduction to this topic, and then we're going to have the Maimon with the help of Hashem. And the theme of the Maimon, in one sentence, is the idea of reaching. You see, the Maimon asks, they seem to be two completely opposite things. The offerings which are brought on the altar. The Zohar says about the offerings, Raza de Korbana, the secret of the offering, rises up to the infinite, to Ein Sof. So the offering is something going up and up and up. Whereas the silver socket is the lowest part of the Mishkan. It's the part which stands on the ground. It's right there. You could imagine it gets muddy. It's there on the ground.
It supports it.
It supports it. That's true. That's very true. But, are you going up or coming down? And the Rebbe's theme, ultimately, in the discourse and in many of his teaching, both. That is the whole idea. We rise up to the highest level, and we bring that down to the lowest level. So it's not enough to rise to the highest level just by itself. We have to bring it down to the lowest level. And obviously, being at the lowest level, that's itself not enough without having the rising above. So it's that combination of the rising above and the coming down below. Oh, ya, 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 yo, ya, yo, ya, ya, da, ya, da, ya, bam, bo. Ya, 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 ba, ya, yo, yo. Ha, ya, da, dam, ba, ya, ya, da, dam, ba, yo, ya, ho, ya, ya, dam, ba, ya, ya, yo, ya, ya, da, dam, ba, ya, ba, yo. Ho, ya, da, dam, ba, ho, ya, da, dam, ba, ho, ya, 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 da, dam, ba, ho, ya, 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 da, dam, ba, ho, ya, ya, ho, ya, ya, yo. Ki tisa et rosh b'nei Yisrael. When you count the heads of the children of Israel. Ze yitnu, this is what they should give, machatzit ha-shekel, a half shekel, lechapel nafshotechem, to atone for your souls. Hinei b'machatzit ha-shekel, now in this half shekel, yeshnam shnei inyanim, there are two aspects. Inyan echad, one is, b'tchilat nidvat ha-mishkan, at the beginning of the giving of the gifts in order to build the Mishkan, the sanctuary, Shenatnu kol echad ve'echad, that every person gave machatzit ha-shekel, a half shekel, u'mehem na'asu adonim. From then, the silver sockets were made. Ve'inyan sheni, and the second aspect, mishehu kama mishkan, when the Mishkan was now built and set up, Shenatnu kol echad machatzit ha-shekel, everyone gave a half shekel, liknot mehen kovnot zibur shel kol shana v'shana, to buy with them the communal offerings of the entire year. So everyone would give each year a half a shekel, and by the whole Jewish people together, that was enough to pay for all the public offerings. We have to understand the relationship of these two aspects of the half shekel, adonim v'korbanot, sockets on the ground and the offerings. Because they seem to be very different. The sockets are the lowest part of the sanctuary. And in fact, they are not part of the Mishkan itself. They're the foundation of the Mishkan. So David said, you know, the foundation is very important, which is a very good point. But what is actually the Mishkan? Shahari Mishkan Atzmo, the sanctuary itself, what's called Mishkan. Mishkan means the place where God dwells, like Shochen, from like the word Shekhinah. Hu akrashim vayiriyot is the planks and the curtains. Umaskanat ha-gemara hi, and the Talmud discusses this in Tractate Shabbat. The Amakha, the verse says, va'asitan krashim la-mishkan, you should make planks for the Mishkan. So you're making planks for the Mishkan. Mishkan karui Mishkan, ve'en krashim kruin Mishkan. So in fact, what is the Mishkan? The curtains, not the planks. So it's not even the planks which are the Mishkan, it's the curtains. Hainu, that means, she'ikah Mishkan, according to this passage in the Talmud, the main part of the Mishkan, hu ha-yiriyot, are the curtains. Kamo she'katuv, ve'et ha-mishkan ta'aseh ese yiriyot. There's a verse which says, you should make the sanctuary 10 curtains, and it describes how these curtains should be sewn together. Ve'ilu adanim, whereas the sockets, hayu betachtit ha-mishkan, they were underneath the Mishkan. She'amdu al gabei ha'afar shebekarka Mishkan. They stood on the earth, which was in the ground of the Mishkan. Ve'aleim hayu akhashim, and on them there were the planks. Ve'aleim hayiriyot, and on them were the curtains. Hayirot ha-tachtonot, first of all the lower level, the inner level. Ve'aleim yiriyot izim, and then goat skins were outside, ve'aleim orot elim odomim ve'orot chashim, and on the very top there were ram skins dyed red and the skin of chashim, which is a creature that doesn't exist anymore, some kind of multicolored creature. Shemizeh muvan, from which we understand, shehadanim heim hadaga ayote tachtona shebemishkan, they're the lowest level of the Mishkan. V'chein hugam, and similarly, it is, b'vchinot d'seder ishtal shalut. When we consider the order, the Kabbalistic order of the downchaining of the worlds, hanir mazot b'firtei ha'inyanim shebimishkan, which are hinted at in the details of the sanctuary. Shehadanim romzim, the sockets hint, ala b'china yoter tachtona, to the very lowest level. Kiyadua, as is known, she'adanim, the word adanim meaning sockets, hui miloshon shem aleph dalet nun yud, is like this divine name, aleph dalet nun yud, which represents the sphira malchut, as it says in the next page. She'inyano besfirot, and the idea of malchut represents in the sphirot, hu sfirat malchut, the sphira kingship, sphira hayoteh tachtona, the lowest sphira. V'ilu inyan ha-korbanot. Now the korbanot, on the other hand, hu ikar inyano shel ha-mishkan. That is the main aspect of what the Mishkan is all about. And in note 8, it says, see Rambam, the beginning of the laws of the temple. Now the Rambam, in the beginning of the laws of the temple, says it is a mitzvah to build a temple where korbanot will be offered. For the Rambam, korbanot are the central feature of what the temple is all about. V'hu inyan na'ale b'yoter, and the korbanot, the offerings, are something very exalted. K'mavor b'hemshech ha'ilila, as is explained in the series of discourses which are studied around the time of the 10th of Shvat, that we studied one a couple of weeks ago, Shekorbanot, and also last week, part of that continuation, Shekorbanot hem inyan keruva kochot vachushim. Korban comes from the word karov, meaning near. Bringing a korban means bringing near one's kochot, one's physical qualities, vachushim, one's senses, focusing on the divine. Kedi'ita b'sefer b'ahir, as it says in a Kabbalistic book, Amai kri korban, why is it called a korban? Which comes from the word near, bringing near, al shem shemekarev, because it brings people close. So the korban brings people close. It's interesting that the word has nothing to do with the English word that we use as a translation, sacrifice. Korban does not suggest giving anything up. On the contrary, korban implies coming close to God. So one brings an animal, or it might be flour or wine or oil, whatever it is, to the temple in order to be brought closer to God. So much so, now we have this famous passage from the Zohar, Raza de Kuvana, the secret of the offerings, or Le ad Raza de Ein Sof, rises to the secret of the infinite. Vinimtsa Adanim be Korbanot Minyanim Shonim Muvdalim Zem Zebetachlin. So this means the sockets and the offerings are completely different things. Vitzarich Lavin Mawa Shaichutam Zeleze, what's the connection between them? Because they both come from the half shekel. So the fact that they both are paid for by the half shekel implies that they have some connection together, and the question is, what is the connection?
The word sacrifice, you said it's not connected. So where does that come from then? Why is it used for that?
That's a very good question. It might come from the Greek. The reason, you know, the Torah was translated into Greek. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure which way this went. I think the Greek was then translated into Latin. So the English translations come on that path. So I think they were translating from the Latin.
Is it related to the word sacred?
Well, it's interesting that the use of the word sacrifice today means giving something up. You know, he had to make a great sacrifice to live in London.
Could it also be that the word, I mean, another word would be offering, but that word has a very strong connection to Christianity. So would perhaps the translators try to avoid using the word offering? Because in a way that's something that you do. That brings you closer, as opposed to sacrifice bringing you, but because of the connection of using it in a Christian context.
I mean, when we think of the translators of the Bible into English, I mean, the first translators were all Christian. Mm-hmm. That's there were.
Do we associate the word offering with mincha?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, the word mincha is very often translated as offering, and mincha means gift, and it's like a flower offering. So I mean, very often one does use the word offering translating, but it's.
I wanted to ask about krav, battle. If you just want to carry on with the.
Well, the krav means battle, and I think the way, because the two people fighting come close to each other.
Yes.
Or the two armies join in battle.
Yes.
Yes, so that's krav.
But would that then have a significance to korbanot? Because in what way would you...
Because it's the coming close.
Coming close, but would you... You don't fight. Like, there's no... Is there some element of struggle when you give an offering?
Oh, I see. That's interesting.
Or is that...
I think it's two different directions, yes, with the same basic point of coming near. Mm. So in battle, one comes near the opponent and fights with him. And in bringing an offering, one is being brought close to God. But there is the idea from the Zohar, I think, Shad Slotza, the time of prayer, Shad Krava is the time of a battle. Oh. So prayer is a kind of battle with oneself. We have an animal self and a divine self. The divine aspect wants to pray to God. The animal self hasn't got time, wants to chat, wants to do this and that. So there's a certain battle between the divine self and the animal self just to get oneself to pray. And on a deeper level, the animal self has a strong power of love, which is often expressed as lust. But the goal in prayer is to transform that power of love, that it should focus on godliness, and that that same energy of thirsting love should be for the divine. And so that is the battle to transform our animal self into a divine channel. Which so that's the battle of prayer. So prayer can be a very meditative process, thinking and, you know, struggling with oneself. There's a beautiful picture of people in contemplative prayer on a Shabbat afternoon, and there's one man has got his talit over his shoulder and he's walking up and down like he hasn't yet got to the beginning of prayer. He's struggling with himself.
Nice, thank you.
Talking of prayer, we heard that the Rebbe never used to come to Shacharit, didn't pray with the Minyan until after his wife passed away. So, something like that. How is that?
He would pray alone, like in he would pray on Shabbat with the Minyan. Yeah. You're talking about during the week. Yeah. He prayed alone, which is an old Hasidic concept of people praying in a very deep way. I heard just the other day, a couple of days ago, Rabbi Yoel Kahn, who is a famous exponent of the Rebbe's teaching, and he came to New York in 1950, just after the previous Rebbe passed away. And he knew the Rebbe at that point, he got to know the Rebbe at that point, and all the way through he was the chozer of the Rebbe. The Rebbe would say a discourse and Rabbi Yoel would hear it once and remember the whole thing by heart. In fact, you know, a discourse and many sichot, many teaching. So he was very close with the Rebbe. So he just had a 90th birthday, thank God. And I was told that during this, he told of something he had seen. It was the Rebbe in his room, davening. And the Rebbe read one line of the davening, and then he walked around the room, like thinking. Then he came back to the siddur and read another line. Mm-hmm. And then he walked around the room, thinking, you know, like, so for the Rebbe, davening is a whole meditative process. You know, it doesn't quite fit in with being cramped in a minyan.
Half an hour.
It's, but he will come in for Kriyat HaTorah.
Yeah.
So Monday and Thursday, when the Torah was read, there would be the minyan, and then for the reading of the Torah, the Rebbe would come in. I think wearing talit and tefillin, but I can't remember. I did witness this, but I can't remember quite. And he would look at a chumash during the reading of the Torah, and I remember as he was looking at the chumash, you know, he suddenly, like, you know, focused on something, you know, like an idea, an idea about something. Because many of his sichot were about the chumash, and there are his famous Rashi sichot, where he analyzes Rashi in a very unusual way, very interestingly.
I bought the book called The Inside Story.
Oh,
yeah,
about Rashi.
So it's just his commentary on lots of characters, lots of personalities from through Tanakh.
Right.
Yeah, it's it's really good.
So
he takes, everyone's really, he studies Cain and Hevel, he studies Noah, he studies Dina.
Right. So who wrote it?
Yeah, Yankee Tauber.
Oh, Yankee Tauber, so that's nice. Yeah. So very interesting. Right, okay, Ot Bet. Gam tzarich lahavin mechlalut. We also have to understand in general. Inyan netinat machatzit ha-shekel liknot mehem kovnot tzibur. The idea of giving a half shekel to buy these public offerings. Shal zeh nema lechaper al nafshoteichem. We read this together. It says to atone for their souls. On your souls. Shehakovanot lechaparahim bayim. The offerings come as a kapara, as an atonement. Shuinyan ha-kapara l'chataim. That means atoning for sins. V'chayadu ha-perush. V'mashe katuv. It's known the explanation of what it says. Kol ha-over ala pekudim. Remember, we read these words and it was, Rashi explained it meant counting, like things pass by and you count them. But the Zohar says something else. Man da'aval pekudaya da'raita. Someone who has transgressed the commandments of the Torah. This is actually in the Or HaChaim, the commentary Or HaChaim on the Chumash, which incidentally was the Or HaChaim was a great rabbi living in Morocco, in the same time as the Baal Shem Tov was in Eastern Europe. And the Or HaChaim, Rabbi Chaim Ibn Attar, he only had daughters. And his perush, which is a very mystical perush, was written for his daughters. It's like a summary of his Divrei Torah to his daughters.
Like Rashi.
That's right, yes. So he writes there, Man da'aval pekudaya d'oraita. He says it in the name of the Zohar, but I think maybe people haven't actually found it in the Zohar, but they do know it's in the Or HaChaim. It's in Zohar Chadash. Right. It's in Zohar Chadash. Which is one of the three parts of the Zohar. There's the regular Zohar, there's Tikkuni Zohar, and Zohar Chadash. So it's about someone who transgresses the commandments of the Torah. Now, what does it mean, transgressing the commandments of the Torah? The kai al chet ha'ega. This is talking about the sin of the golden calf. Shuhu chet klali, which is a general sin. U'makor v'shoresh l'chol ha'chataim. And it's the source of all other sins. So we've got the sin of the golden calf. So let's just see. We've got the golden calf. Now, and where does that come from? Uchemochet Eitz Hadaat, like the sin of the tree of knowledge. Uchetitah b'gemara, as it says in the Talmud, Shebashad Chet Eitz Hadaat, at the time of the sin of the tree of knowledge, Heitil hanachash bechava zuama, the snake put something impure inside Chava. Now, from the point of view of the Talmud, the sin was not just that she ate something that the snake told her to eat. It was more intimate and unpleasant than that, and there's something impure in her. Uchashamdu Yisrael al ha-Sinai, and when the Jewish people were there at Mount Sinai, paska zuamatan, that impurity stopped. Uvecheta ega, but at the sin of the calf, chazra zuamatan, the impurity returned. So there we have the idea of this basic impurity and the fact of the physical human beings. And you see, it's going to go into the question where the sin of the tree of knowledge comes from. But the fact is that simply, you see, the essential thing about a human being, as opposed to an angel, or for that matter, an animal, is that a human being has free will. And having free will means that we can disobey God. And so that is our highest and our lowest aspect at the same time. So we are able to disobey God, and therefore when we do obey God, it's a wonderful thing. But the fact that we can disobey God, that puts us at the lowest level of existence, because everything else doesn't disobey God. The stars, the angels, the animals, they all do what they're supposed to do. We, human beings, have got the power to disobey God, and we Jews even more, because we've got the non-Jews have got seven Noahide laws through which they can be elevated to a very exalted status, whereas we have 613 mitzvot, so what one eats, and what one this, and what one, you know, all kinds of extra little bits for us to go wrong, God forbid. So there is this concept of the at the so we've got the sin of the tree of knowledge, so that goes earlier, tree of knowledge, and so eating from the tree caused a certain negative quality which was washed away by the giving of the Torah. So the giving of the Torah, Sinai, washed that impurity away, but then it came back with the golden calf. Now, line 23.
Why does it say that the golden calf is the source of it all? I mean, it isn't. It's a derivative from the...
Well, yeah, but there we were at Mount Sinai, so we were pure. It's at Mount Sinai that we became fully Jewish in the full sense of the word. Mm. And so that was beautiful. And then we messed it up.
So is this a connection then to what you were speaking about earlier about the meaning of the half shekel, that it gives something for the lowest, which were the sockets, and the highest, which was the korban, so representing the physical building of the mishkan and the spiritual, which is the korban. And then you were saying too, well, okay, so the highest and the lowest aspect of human beings is that one has free choice or free will, which can be used for the divine or it can be used to disobey God. So is this perhaps this symbolism of actually giving this half shekel of somehow trying to atone for the two?
For the negative possibly.
For the negative and, well, the acknowledgement of that I have these two, that each person has these two, by giving the half shekel is a way of acknowledging that, because you're contributing to both the lowest and the highest in the lowest physical part of the Mishkan and the highest spiritual part of the Mishkan.
I think the way the Maimon is going to continue, I think it fits with what you're saying. I think it fits with what you're saying. Normally we speak about atonement coming from rising to a higher level. It's by rising, like Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur atones for so many aspects of negative behavior. But it does that by us rising to a higher level, where from that level there's a radiance which purifies everything and washes away the negative. Lifnei Hashem titaru, before God you're purified. So here we have the idea of this half shekel being given, so we could look at it in terms of the offerings which rise up to Ein Sof and then bring a flow of radiance downwards. So and the offerings themselves, many of them are kapara. The person accidentally did a certain sin and they bring a chatat, they bring a sin offering to atone for that. So the offerings do connect with this whole atonement process. And of course, the Day of Atonement is a day with all kinds of offerings being offered in the temple. Yeah, yeah. So I think it fits with what you're saying. Line 23. Chazra azuma legamri. Even though the impurity didn't completely return, as it was at the time of the eating from the tree of knowledge, as we see, that even after the sin of the golden calf, Yeshno chiluk, there is still a difference, ben gufei umot ha'olam, between the physical body of the nations of the world, the gufei b'nei Yisrael lahavdil, and the bodies of the Jewish people. Now, the Zohar speaks about the way that it's not only the soul of the individual Jew which is holy, it's also the body is holy. And in this, it's distinct from other nations of the world, even though a non-Jew is able to be a Chassid Umot HaOlam, one of the righteous Gentiles, by keeping the seven Noahide laws, and merits the Garden of Eden and Olam Haba, as the Rambam puts it, the world to come. Nonetheless, there's still a physical difference. Kedivrei HaGemara, as the Talmud says, Yisrael she'amdu al ha-Sinai, the Jewish people who stood at Mount Sinai, pas gazu matam, the negative aspect which came as a result of the tree of knowledge disappeared. Umot ha'olam, the nations of the world, she'lo amdu al ha-Sinai, who did not have that experience of standing at Mount Sinai, lo pas gazu matam, that negative aspect didn't depart. Mekom makom, and so nonetheless, even though there is that difference, but still, Harei Chozra Hazuma B'miktzat Al Kol Panim, the impurity did come back through the golden calf. So it's not as much as the nations of the world. Now then comes the difference, you know, so what is the effect in practical action? And it's in terms of the demand on a person, it makes no difference whether the person has a propensity to be selfish, cruel, nasty, or is a very idealistic, spiritual, positive person. We all have to behave according to the Torah. So we mustn't steal, we must honor our parents, and you know, do all kinds of things, the right thing, even though for one person it's very easy and natural for him or her to do it, and for another person it's a big struggle. So there's some aspects that, you know, then comes the question, what is the moral effect, or, you know, what visible effect is there in this Zuama? And it might not be a visible effect at all. It might be something which is a purely spiritual thing, which can't be observed by others. And you can have a person who, you know, a non-Jewish person who's extremely kind, and one can have sometimes a Jewish person who is a very problematic individual. Nonetheless, spiritually, there are these there are these differences. Incidentally, one of the Kabbalists, Rabbi Meir Ibn Gabay, says that when Mashiach comes, there will be the revival of the dead, not only for the Jewish people, but also for the righteous Gentiles. So even that quality of the revival of the dead, according to him, relates also to non-Jews, although most sources don't speak about it in that way. But there's still a distinction between the Jew and the non-Jew. But that distinction is something that gives the Jew the responsibility to bring the world to a positive level in terms of the revelation of God in the world. Now let's look at line 3. V'hainu, this is, l'fi shechet ha'egel, this is because the sin of the calf, hu me'ein chet eitz hadat, it's aversion, it's parallel to, it's similar to the sin of the tree of knowledge. V'zeu ma shekatuv gavi chet ha'egel, that's what it says about the sin of the calf. Over yom pokdi, God says, when I punish the Jewish people, I'll call Shah Chataim for any other sins. Ufakadati, I will be punishing you partly for the sin of the golden calf. Hainu shulule cheta egel. If it weren't for the sin of the calf, lo haitaif shahut lechlalut inyana chatuim. It would not have been possible for Jewish people to sin. Kevin shecheta egel humein chet eitzadat. Since the sin of the calf is like the sin of the tree of knowledge, which is the root and the cause of all sins. So if there hadn't been that, it would have been a completely unnatural thing to sin. Like, you know, why would a person come in and bang their head against the wall until it bleeds? You know, you'd say, you know, something wrong with him. Why is he doing that? So for us to do something in any way against the Torah, it's really an irrational thing. How could we possibly do that? That's so it comes from this weakness that we have as a result of the golden calf. And that in itself is a kind of reflection of the weakness that comes from the sin of the tree of knowledge. Now we're going higher. Line 9. Behine, now behold, yadua, it is known. Shechet eitz hadat, that the sin of the tree of knowledge, nishtal shel mimiyut hayareach, comes from the decrease of the moon. Now I think you remember this story, which Rashi tells in the beginning of the Torah, that God said, let there be luminaries, and the moon said, and so they began off being the same size. And the moon said, it's impossible for two kings to share one crown. So God said, all right, v'chi miyati et atzmech, go and make yourself smaller. And the sun will be the more powerful one, and it's the sun which shines to the moon, and the moon shines with reflected light. So then comes the question, you know, why did God do this to his moon? So on Rosh Chodesh, on the new moon, a sin offering is brought. Among the offerings, one of the offerings is a sin offering. Now, who's the sin offering for? So one of the explanations, it's for God, who says, I'm bringing a sin offering because I made the moon smaller. So,
wow. Interesting.
So here we have an earlier cause of sin on an ethereal level. The smallness, the contraction of the moon, and then we'll come to another kind of contraction.
So the sin offering is not also because the moon complained?
It's interesting. The way it's put is that it's not the moon's sin offering, it's God's sin offering.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is one of the charges in 1240. Was it 1240? I think so. Yeah, in 1240 there was a accusation against the Talmud in Paris that the Talmud is blasphemous. So some Jew who'd unfortunately converted to Christianity gave a list of 29 or 30 points to the Pope of the time, and they are on things of this type, like, you know, the Shekhinah weeps because it destroyed the temple, things like that. You know, how can you say that about God? So there's this intimate way that the sages speak of the divine, so that was regarded by the Church of the 13th century as being blasphemous, and as a result they found the Talmud guilty of blasphemy, and they collected up all the volumes of Talmud they could find in France and burnt them in a certain square, which people say today they know which square it is, and 24 cartloads of books were burnt there, which was a terrible thing. Now, so now, line 10, Umiyat Hayareach, and the smallness of the moon, the contraction of the moon, Nishtal Shal Mishvirat HaKelim Detor, came from the breaking of the vessels. Now, have you heard of the breaking of the vessels?
Yeah. But not in great depth.
Okay, so the idea of the breaking of the vessels, which is particularly dwelt on in the Lurianic Kabbalah. Rabbi Isaac Luria explains, and we know this through the books of Rabbi Chaim Vital, the first stage of creation was radiance flowing into vessels. Now these vessels, it's like the Sfirot. The Sfirot are some kind of container which contains the radiance so that we're able to get from infinite God to a finite world. And it goes in stages, and it comes down, and so finally there is a physical world. But the first stage of this whole thing, the radiance flowing into vessels, the radiance was too intense, and the vessels were too weak, and also the vessels didn't connect with each other. Each vessel was like alone. And so the intense radiance in this lonely vessel smashed the vessel. And the first vessel smashed, and then the second vessel smashed. And so there was Shvirat HaKelim, the breaking of the vessels. And that caused a kind of a cataclysm. And it led to the possibility of evil in the whole system. And those broken shards of the Kelim, of the vessels, are what's called Klipot. And the Klipa, it's like got a little bit of the spark of the original radiance there. And that's why evil is attractive. That's the problem with evil. As it says in the Bible, Maim Gnuvim Yumtaku. Stolen water is sweet. Normally water doesn't have a taste, but if you steal it, then it's sweet. So that whole, the temptation of evil. So that's the spark in the Klipa. And if we withstand the temptation, we elevate the spark. And that is the whole process of birur, of sifting through existence, that we are here in existence in order to transform it and elevate it. And tikkun, the task of tikkun, of bringing about the whole, their holiness, which is scattered among these klipot, should rejoin its source in the right way, and that becomes the world of tikkun, which ultimately is the world of redemption. So that's the whole messianic process on one leg, so, as explained by the Arizal. So
the nitzotzot that we had to collect from Mitzrayim, those
they're part shards. Of it. Yes, they're parts. Yeah, they're the sparks from the lowest level of klipot. So in Egypt, there was this very, very low level. And by the fact that we were in Egypt, we brought out these sparks and we elevated those sparks. And so that purified the world enough so that the Torah could be given in the world. That's,
is that why Egypt was considered the most
low?
Low nation.
Yeah.
So it was our job to clean up.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were put in a very difficult situation. That's when, you know, we went down to the lowest level of impurity where we could have been lost, God forbid. But just standing in that situation and maintaining our identity was what was necessary. Now, so we haven't finished yet. The liner level. Ushvirat HaKelim, in the breaking of the vessels, Nishtal Shel Mi Miut V'Chisaron Or, comes from the reduction and the lack, the contraction of the light, Lemaila, above, Al Yedei HaTzimtzum Arishon, through the first Tzimtzum. Now, the first Tzimtzum, Tzimtzum literally means contraction, but it doesn't actually mean that, so it's better just to call it Tzimtzum. And so the idea of that is that at the beginning, godliness filled the whole of everything. There's only godliness. And then comes this moment of Tzimtzum, that the radiance, as it were, withdraws to the side, right? And so there's a kind of an empty space in the middle, except that it's not really empty. There's still godliness there. You can't say it's really empty. This became an argument among the Kabbalists. Is it really empty or not? And then came a flow of godliness within, which ended up making the worlds, or the Sfirot, and the spiritual realms, Atzilut, you know, these different worlds. And right in the middle is the physical world, right at the sort of at the lowest level. Now, the argument about, so outside is Ein Sof, the infinite. And then you have a kind of chalal hapanui, empty space. But it's not really empty. And this argument among the Kabbalists is suggested as the real difference between the early Hasidim and the early Mitnagdim. The argument is this really empty space? According to the view that it is empty space. In other words, tzimtzum, the word tzimtzum, letzamtzem, kipshuto, letzamtzem means to contract something. Nitzdarachti letzamtzem et ahotzaot. I had to contract my expenses. It's really contraction. So God is contracted to the side, and so this is really an empty space where godliness is not present. That means that there are things where godliness is not to be found. Whereas if you say, as the other Kabbalists, that it doesn't mean kipshuto, literally, it's tzimtzum lo kipshuto, it means a kind of veiling. So this empty space is only comparatively empty. In fact, it's got divine radiance there. So that means that in everything in existence, there is divine radiance. So a departed friend of mine was an anthropologist, and he did a study. He wrote his doctorate on the Rabbi Arela Hasidim in Jerusalem. He began off when he first came to New York to see the Rebbe. He was a student doing a master's, I think, in anthropology, and he was studying the Red Indians, a particular tribe. And he asked, and he was studying in yeshiva in 770 at the same time. And he asked the Rebbe, could he go and spend 3 days with this Red Indian tribe? The Rebbe said, go for a month. So he goes off for a month, and he spent a month with these Red Indians, and he was very impressed with their whole lifestyle and many things about them. And then he came to write a PhD, so he went to Jerusalem and lived in Me'er Sharim, living with the Rabbi Arela Shomer Amunim Hasidim, and he wrote his PhD about them, and it's published as an English book, Guardians of the Faithful, describing their very spiritual lifestyle. Anyway, later he wrote a book comparing two groups in Jerusalem. Now, the two groups look exactly the same, but one were Hasidim and the other Mitnagdim. But in Jerusalem, like they all look the same. They all wear shtreimel, and they all have long beckers and beards and so on. One group, the only thing they do is learn Torah. There is no other acceptable activity, as if everything else is impure and shouldn't be touched. And the other group, then that's the Mitnagdic group. And the Hasidic group, some people learned Torah, and some people had a job doing this and doing that, because somehow everything could be seen to have spirituality within it. So that's how he explained. So he went back to this argument about Tzimtzum, explaining that in terms of the different lifestyles of these two groups, who otherwise superficially were very, very similar, except for this view of the world. One view of the world is that everything is holy and can be elevated, and the other is that this is holy and that is not.
Which group is it that wears the striped? Is it striped bekesher or striped dress?
Well, I think the striped bekesher is a typical Jerusalem thing, so anyone coming from Jerusalem, old, the yeshuv, the old yeshuv of Jerusalem, is likely to wear a striped Bekesher, I think.
As opposed to the newer groups who want to wear their kabbatas, their black kabbatas.
So, all this is explained by the Friedrich Rebbe. So it is getting late. So let's now, if we go down to line 21, so v'nimtza, that means at the end of the line 21, shemachatzit ha-shekel, that this half shekel, who in Yom Klali is a general concept, which affects the entire service of a person, of the Jewish people, the Kiyuma Torah mitzvot, in keeping Torah and the mitzvot, she'inyanan nifolam shachata o'el kilamata, because what we're trying to do is draw down divine radiance below. And in order to do that, we have to reach beyond this, all these different levels of floor. Yeah, we had all these kind of floors, starting with the Tzimtzum HaRishon, the breaking of the vessels, the contraction of the moon, the tree of knowledge, the golden calf, and the idea of the giving of the half a shekel is reaching up, reaching beyond all that to the infinite beyond. And so that connects with another way of understanding Ove al HaPikudim. Everyone went across the sea. It has to do with going through the splitting of the sea, because that was an amazing revelation of the divine, in an incredible way, this revelation. So,
kind of a mikveh as well, isn't it? Going through the sea.
That's interesting, although we were supposed not to get wet.
Yeah. But we're surrounded by water.
That's right. Yeah. So now then the Rebbe launches into a discussion of prayer. And also the discussion about Korbanot. Because we sometimes find negative statements about Korbanot in Tanakh. So there's a phrase. It's on line 8, on page 8. Chesed chafatzki velo zevach. It's a line from Hosea. I want kindness and charity rather than sacrifices. So, why? Because the zevach, the korbanot, they are going upwards, whereas in fact the goal is a flow downwards, which is chesed, which is kindness. So kindness flows from above to below, and the korbanot in themselves flow from below upwards. Now then comes a whole comparison with prayer, because prayer relates to the korbanot. And what's happening in prayer is two things. We are ascending to a higher level, and we're drawing a flow down from God into the world. So the ladder of prayer, it doesn't mention this, but the ladder of prayer that Jacob dreamt, with angels going up the ladder and angels coming down the ladder. So that's like the words of the prayer and the spiritual feelings in the prayer going up, and then blessing coming down from God into the world. So that process is like the offerings. Now, that in fact, that's what the korbanot are like. It is a flow upwards, and it's also a flow downwards. It's a corresponding flow downwards, because we bring the offering in order to rise up to God to the highest levels, and then comes a flow down, which is the response from the divine. And so therefore, in fact, there is this double quality together that we have rising up to the highest level through the offerings and also coming down to the lowest levels through the effect of the offerings and through the effect of prayer as well. And so that's the link between the Adonim, the silver sockets which are on the ground, and the fact of the sanctuary itself and the offerings of the sanctuary, which is the other part of what the half shekel is paying for. So at the same time, we have rising to the highest and bringing down to the lowest, and it's all unified as one.
Square. That's what I'm saying.